This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Blitz is defined as a sudden savage attack. It is indeed all this. The effect is sure. The premise is simple. It's a basic primal confrontation. Man to man. No excuses are offered. None accepted.
Welcome to the latest edition of Longhorn Blitz with Horns247.com.
Looks like a radio station.
Now, here are your hosts, lifetime Longhorn Rod Babers.
Pure athlete, yeah.
A transcend race, hombre.
Matt Butler.
I don't talk man. I back it up.
And we are chock full of that, man.
Damn right.
And Jeff Howe.
It's still real to me, damn it.
And that's the bottom line, because Stone Cold said so.
If you're going to blitz, come strong, but don't come at all.
Coming strong with another edition of Longhorn Blitz with Horns 24/7. I am Jeff Howe. It is an Election Day edition of Longhorn Blitz. Had to bump back recording this week. Didn't intend to do it on Election Day, but such is life. But more importantly, not in the grand scheme of things, obviously, but more importantly for the purpose of this podcast, it is a victory edition of Longhorn Blitz, and we will break down a 41-34 overtime win over Oklahoma State and start to look a little into West Virginia. And I have got, Rod Babers, a statistic that I know you're probably willing to sink your teeth into and will latch on to as we go forward in the week because I loved it so much. Went down a little, not a total rabbit hole, mini rabbit hole, and found something leading into the West Virginia game in terms of Tom Herman and the narrative that he is not good as a ranked team facing an unranked team as head coach. And also, can this program handle success? We'll talk about it, but we got to break down this win over Oklahoma State. And to do that with me, I now bring in the rest of the team. He is the master of the soundboard, the drop machine extraordinaire. He is our lead research analyst on Longhorn Blitz and a daily fantasy guru. He is Matt Butler. Matt, did you vote already?
Yes, I did. I went out and did some early voting.
Mm-hmm. Good.
It was pretty odd coincidence. Ran into my cousin outside the polling place. It was
nice.
Nice.
Are we at the point now where all of our polling places are using electronic ballots? Have you guys ever gone to a polling place where you had to use paper ballot?
No, I don't think so.
I haven't.
The first election I ever voted in was the 2002 gubernatorial election in Texas. I used old school paper ballot. And then the 2004 presidential election, I used old school paper ballot.
My memory's not good for 2004. I can't exactly remember if it was paper or not, but if you did, then it probably was paper when I did it. I just can't remember.
Yeah, that's such is life when you're polling places in Andes, Texas, Matt. Not a lot.
True.
You can count those by hand. And
I've always remembered
get them in a timely manner.
It was a very weird, like, turning of a circle for a long time. That was always what you did when you voted.
A man who he could talk politics, he could talk pop culture, he can talk a number of things, but on this show we love him because he is our lockdown corner here on Longhorn Blitz. Lifetime Longhorn, 2002 UT All-American, 2002 semifinalist for the Jim Thorpe Award, fourth round draft choice of the New York Giants back in 2003, spent his NFL career with the Giants, Lions, Bears, Bucks, Broncos, and a year with the Hamilton Tiger Cats in the CFL. When he was done with football, he got himself back to Austin, Texas and the 40 Acres where he earned his degree. Whenever that T-ring comes in, we will make sure he wears it proudly. Nevertheless, he is a card-carrying member of DBU, and when you get that All-American honor recognized by the NCAA, they make sure you get one of those black cards. Number 21 in your program, number one in your hearts, Mr. Rod Babers.
Thanks for the intro, brother.
Rod B., did you vote already?
Yeah.
Nice.
I did early voting.
Like we're all exercising our constitutional rights to vote. That's awesome. I hope everybody listening to this show did the same. Don't care who you voted for, just as long as you educated yourself on the issues, you got out and voted. Congratulations to you. Guys, congratulations also in order to the Texas Longhorns. They won a football game, right? 41-34 on Halloween. They go to Stillwater and get a win. Rod, first of all, let me just say, we were going to record this on Monday as we usually do with Longhorn Blitz. I was having massive back issues. I went to a Rosti. They got me right. I'm on the road to not being hunched over and crunched over in pain all the time, so feeling much better today. But Rod, we talked about this yesterday, or on Monday, I should say, when we sat in here and we're going to record before we postponed. if you ask a Texas fan, hey, what really changed about this game, the answer should be nothing, because it wasn't that much different from, with the exception of the Baylor game, it's not that different from every other game this team has played in Big 12 play, with two notable exceptions, one being special teams. Not only it wasn't killing you, it was actually helping you in this game, and you just made a couple of plays when you really needed to.
Yeah, I agree with that. I think it's special teams was a strength for him, and I don't know if special teams has been a strength for him all year long. And I would say on defense, you formulated an identity of sorts because you just wanted to stop the run. And you gave up a lot in the passing game, which we'll talk about, but they hadn't, the run defense hadn't been that good all year. And they hadn't been that focused all year. And so I think that was also a big part of, right, you were able to make a team one-dimensional. Baylor, I don't know, we got to kind of cut Baylor out. Baylor seems to be the outlier, whether it be penalties and missed tackles and everything. Like, it seems to be more the outlier than the norm. So I think for Texas, it's just important for them to be able to, you know, I mean, not only find a way to win, but it was just, I think you're right, it was the margin for error for them, obviously, is always really, really small. But the special teams helped them out and made a couple of big plays. Of course, they had to miss the extra point, but they made big plays, and they had been a liability all year long. And then I think ultimately the defense had, I think, took a step forward, because the linebackers, as I pointed out last week, they are no longer a liability. They are now, I think, I don't know if they're a strength, but they're not a liability anymore. Mm-hmm. The liability has switched from the linebackers to the corners, and I think that game was an example of that. Those linebackers were able to pitch into the rush defense effort, and they stopped the run successfully. The corners were left on an island to fend for themselves, and we saw how that worked out.
Yeah, from a strategic standpoint, Rod, we talked about Chris Ash was going to have to pick his spots on when he rolled coverage to Tylan Wallace's side of the field, when they helped the corners.
He didn't.
There was no strategy.
Just pick one spot. It was just stop Chuba. That was it.
Well,
that
that's
his spot. It's like stop Chuba. And I think it was a smart move, because he wanted to put the ball in Spencer Sanders' hand and force Spencer Sanders to beat you.
Yeah.
And we all know Spencer Sanders can beat you, but he's just as likely to beat himself, too, as he is to beat you.
Part.
And that's exactly what happened. Spencer Sanders gave you a few, and that's exactly what you needed in that game. So I think it was a smarter move. Now looking back on it, I think it was a smarter move. It could have blown up in your damn face, and Tylan Wallace could have made you look bad with and broke an NCAA record for yards receiving. That could have happened too. Yeah. But Gundy wanted to stick with the run. Gundy wanted to run the rock, because I think he got afraid in the end. Damn, Spencer Sanders could literally give this game away, and he could have.
And last year it was at the same point that Chuba, I mean, he had Gundy just wanting to run all game long, and I really think that
but he had a freshman quarterback, which is a little difference. I understood that with the freshman quarterback, but you're right, he should have thrown the
ball. And also just a tendency that I think they went into this game knowing, because I don't think necessarily the last few years you could just sit there and be like, man, Gundy, he definitely just wants to run the ball. If he were to pick and choose how this offense runs, it's like, no, this year, this is how he wants this team to run.
With the defense.
And it's a risky proposition, because a lot of the times, if you're talking about taking away, say, the least explosive half of an offense, that's something that if you're wrong, you can get beat quicker and bigger, which isn't always what you want to do if you're talking about it. So you got to be self-aware and assess your situation, and the coaching staff must have liked how they line up, and it makes sense. I mean, Texas's D-line is elite. It has players on the front end that's elite at the collegiate level. Now, they aren't necessarily proven. Texas fans aren't – these aren't guys that you're like, oh, yeah, we're coming into the year, we're going to have one of the best D-lines. You're like, you know, you have the best D-line talent maybe in the conference, but we hadn't seen it put together because the defense had so many issues. And then to allow Wallace to be the one threat that might beat you, it's like, man, we've seen entire games go downhill because you can't stop somebody on the outside and they're explosive and beat you over and over and over. But like you said, when you're the decision maker is the guy back there, and that is volatile and has a chance for explosive, but also a chance to make big time mistakes, they're going to go and put pressure. What do you do with pressure? Well, that's the type of way to get to a quarterback and cause an offense sort of to chop the head of the snake off right there, because of the fact that, yeah, well, if you go and just go in and get into his face, not only this play, but for the rest of the game, it can be something that's inside of his mind and make him make decisions that maybe he doesn't always make. So after looking at it, it's an impressive game plan and then the deploy it and actually go out there and enact it throughout 60 minutes. And it makes you feel so confident not only with the D-line, but like you said, now two games in a row, Texas's only players on defense to play every single snap are the two linebackers. Yep. You don't have anybody else that's done that. And we sort of talked about that in the Big 12, that, you know, it's a devalued position, but it's a valuable position. And especially when you have those two guys on there more than anybody else on your defense, it makes you feel some type of security that you can actually rely on something and then worry about the rest of the mismatches. It isn't something that's volatile. You don't have now a front seven you can almost rely on. That's something you haven't had at Texas for the last few years.
Yeah, Rod, you brought up something on the triple option early in the week last week that kind of got me going down this line of thinking in terms of talking about the Texas defensive line's importance in this game. And that was the Oklahoma State mm-hmm. offensive line. And I'd kind of forgotten all the issues they'd had in the offseason with guys, whether the guys got kicked out of the program, left on their own volition, that
three
offensive
projected
line,
starters.
Yeah, that offensive line was a work in progress. So I went, and you guys know, I mean, Football Outsiders is one of the sites we lean on for some metrics, and I love their they're one of the few sites that actually does line of scrimmage metrics. So I started looking at the Oklahoma State offensive line, and Matt, I'm sure you looked at the numbers going mm-hmm. into the game too. They were not impressive. I mean, they were top. I don't know that in any run game metric, they were top 50 in the country.
Nope. They're dropped down to where they aren't even in top 55, and it's like 75th overall in line yards.
So yeah.
Really far
and
down.
I was like, man. So then you started looking, and people, you know, on Light the Tower got on me. Oh, Jeff, you're just blowing smoke about this defensive line. I'm like, no. Like the Texas defensive line, they were top 10 in the country in line yards per carry allowed. Mm-hmm. They were, I think, top 15-ish in the country in stuff rate. So you start looking at the metrics, mm-hmm. and that's where, Rod, you said it. I said it on my show. I wrote it on the site. Right? Look, if Texas wins this game, we're going to come out of it saying that defensive line dominated yeah. along the line of scrimmage. Rod, that's exactly what you got. All five of your sacks, if you're Texas, were accounted for by the defensive line.
Wow.
I think all but maybe like a half of a tackle for loss was attributed to the defensive line. They had eight of those, so 7.5 were the defensive line. And then we haven't even gotten into Joseph Osai's performance. But, yeah, you need – if you were Texas, one of your keys to winning this game, one of your formula to winning this game should have included, needed to include, had to include that defensive line owning the line of scrimmage. That's exactly what they did.
Mike Gundy before the game, here's his quote about his O-line. And this is what I brought up on the show. That had him. I was like, man, this has got to be brutally honest. I don't know if I've heard Gundy this brutally. He said, we have good skilled players, and we are coming along a bit as an offensive line. But we've made some strides. We have to be protective a little bit on what we do on offense. We can't be like we've been the last 10 or 12 years and do anything we want. And he went on to say, as we develop an offensive line, then we will get a little better as we go throughout the season. He said he went further to say, we have two guys on the offensive line that have played in just two or three games in their entire career. 40% of your offensive line doesn't have much experience, and there's going to be a price to pay for that.
Yeah.
It's almost like he foreshadowed it. He knew that his he knew that that was the biggest weakness on that offense. And I know Spencer Sanders is a liability. Spencer Sanders is high risk, high reward, mm-hmm. right?
He's going to give volatility.
Exactly. He's going to give you really big plays and splash plays, but he also is going to make some boneheaded mistakes and big-time mistakes, and that's what happened in that game. But when you exacerbate that with the fact that you didn't have Chuba, it's basically one of Chuba's worst games. It's basically his worst game in any game of his career with multiple carries in terms of yards per carry. He had 2.9 mm-hmm. yards per carry, something like that. So when you take that away, then you just have Spencer Sanders throwing to Tylan Wallace. He stares down receivers all the time. So I don't know how the DBs couldn't make more plays on the ball. But anyway, I digress. But with all that said, it ends up being a really good game plan because I think Chris Ash saw the same thing that we were looking at, that, all right, if I'm going to win this game, I have to grind that, you know, if you're going to grasp at straws, and I would say the D-line, O-line might have been grasping at straws, that matchup, then grind it to a freaking nub. Grind it to sand. And that's what he did. He blitzed, even blitzed more than I thought he would. He probably blitzed more in his game than he's blitzed in any game this year. I got to go back and track it. But he blitzed quite a bit in this game, too.
Yeah, in terms of individual performances, just go up and down that D-line. That was, we'll get into Osai in a minute, but that was the best game I've seen Taquan Graham play.
Great game.
That was the best. I mean, we haven't really seen Jacoby Jones, period, and then he has a monster game on Saturday.
Totally agree. Coburn is always underrated because he didn't show up on the stat sheet.
But the key to me, Rob, and I want to get to Osai. Don't want to shove that aside. That is the biggest storyline coming out of this game for me.
Mm-hmm.
But, Rod, you mentioned that the linebackers, I love the way you put it. Are they the best linebacker duo in the Big 12? By no means. Mm-hmm.
but they're not killing you. They're not hurting you.
Not anymore. Point. No. I said it last week, and unfortunately, it's still true. The corners are now your problem.
Yeah.
The corners are the biggest liability on this team. Defensive line's a strength. Safety's a strength. Safety's all. Your safeties are your better cover guys. Yep. Chris Brown covers better than any of your corners. Yep. They had Chris Brown matched up a couple of times on deep balls. He doesn't panic. He just turns, looks for the ball. It's simple. It's a look and lean.
Caden Stearns plays the ball in the air as well as anybody you've got on the roster.
Yeah, that was actually one of Caden Stearns' better games, too. But those are strengths now. Linebacker, we said, you know, hey, they make as many plays as they give up. That's all you really can ask from the linebackers. They make as many plays as they're going to give up. Corner, you're getting killed at corner. Think about this. Let's talk about the transition to Joseph Osai here. Joseph Osai had an Ndamukong Suh-type performance. We'll give this stat here in a sec because John Bianco put out a really good stat. Go look at Colt McCoy's and Jordan Shipley's passing numbers and receiving numbers during that game.
It cost mediocre. Colt McCoy a Heisman Trophy.
They're mediocre because he was a force of nature. So Joseph Osai had that kind of performance defensively, rushing a passer, all right? And yet Spencer Sanders had 400 yards passing.
Yes.
Now, I know Tylan Wallace is really good, but let's get – guys, Jordan Shipley and Colt McCoy won scrubs, right? He's like the greatest receiver in Texas history. So that's how bad our corners are, is that you had an Ndamukong Suh on your D-line, and you said probably the best D-line performance overall. You were rushing a passer against Spencer Sanders, who doesn't go through progression reads. He stares down receivers.
Mm-hmm.
And yet, you gave up 400 yards passing. Guys, it's an issue.
Oh, like, 100%.
At this point, yeah, and they not only do they not know how to play the ball, but at this point, they don't even try to make plays on the ball. They're not even processing information throughout the game. They keep running the same play, the deep out, over and over again. When are you going to jump the deep out? Dude, he is staring down the receiver. He is throwing from the opposite hash at times. And you got safety up over the top. Jump the deep out. Jump that route. What are we doing? What are they teaching the corner? And some of these guys are playing off, and they're staring at the quarterback. Listen, when you are playing off, staring at the quarterback, or you're bailing, staring at the quarterback, through the receiver at the quarterback, why aren't you reading the three-step?
You should be able to read
Spencer
whatever.
Sanders is staring right at you. He's looking right at you. He's going to throw the ball at you.
Jalen Green did it one time, and he got a pick.
That's a big play.
And that was just a bad throw. Since that was late, and, yeah. You know, I mean, it was just a bad throw. But still, the corners got to start. Right now, at this point, every 3.75 targets at the corners results in an explosive pass play, 15 yards or more, a defensive pass interference call, or a holding call. So just go 3.75. And you know the truth is? Oklahoma State didn't go at him enough.
Yeah.
They should have kept. Honestly, they should have just kept throwing at the corners.
We talked about the same thing in the Baylor game, Rod. Like, Baylor had that one drive where they went at Jalen Green, and then after the DPI, they stopped going at the corners.
Stopped going at him. It's like, what are you doing? Keep going.
And they're attacking the middle of the field, and like, just they're not getting explosive plays because Texas wasn't missing tackles. So Chris Ash is like, fine. You guys want to try to drive this in 12, 15 plays? Go right ahead. You're going to run out of time.
Yeah, and if you look,
but you can do it if you want.
Do it.
If you look at all the completions, 2 yards per reception, every single DB allowed more than 10 yards per reception on the game. Now, if you look at per target, it gets a little bit deeper. Like, Chris Brown was very good on his. It was 3 targets, only 14 yards. But people like Thompson per target, nearing 12. Looks like Cook.
That's per target.
Per target. Yes, Cook, 18 yards per target on the 3 times he was targeted.
Dude, you got to send me those numbers, please.
Adam Mora was right at almost 9 yards per target. It was
Adam Mora's like one of the best cover guys.
Because he's in the toughest position
he's put there.
So in the slot,
and
you know,
Cook,
9
Cook
targets.
Is too.
And Cook is too.
Too.
Yeah, exactly.
And then Jameson, actually, The frustration there, I guess, was the penalty, though. He didn't get many that were.
And he turned around and made a play on the ball.
Yes.
It took him a while, but he turned, looked, and leaned and made a play on the ball on Tylan Wallace. So that I'll give him props. The corners are making strides. They're just baby steps. They're really, really slow strides.
Still baby steps. It was Jalen Green to round out the numbers. It was 6 targets for 46 yards, so right around 8 yards per target. So those still can go in the better direction. But overall, when you look at the way that the DBs played, it was – at least there's the mentality, the playmaking mentality. I really think that they feel the pass rush, like understand that their pass rush is getting home, so at least you get coached up to play the ball in a quicker window. Now, they aren't doing it very well, but in that situation, situation when you know that you have a pass rush that actually is getting there, it can only help you mentally that know that you have this little small window to defend. It isn't like, say, in recent years when you didn't even at times have pass rush, and then you're just going to be taken advantage of on the second play by the quarterback anytime you have a mobile quarterback.
That's true.
By the way, Rod, Colt McCoy's numbers in that Big 12 championship game, and this will lead us into Joseph Osai, and Ndamukong Suh in that game. Let me see if I can find Ndamukong Suh's numbers.
They were 12. It was almost similar to Osai. It was 12 tackles, Suh, 12, four and a half
tackles,
sacks.
12 tackles, 7 tackles for loss, four and a half sacks.
Yeah.
Colt McCoy that night at AT&T Stadium, then Cowboys Stadium, 20 for 36, no touchdown passes, 184 yards. 3 interceptions, and he was sacked 9 times. He lost a Heisman Trophy that night.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Exactly. So, I mean, so I would say that Spencer Sanders threw a lot of interceptions, made a lot of mistakes, or threw an interception, threw one interception, and actually made a lot of mistakes and fumbled the ball, but he did throw for 400-something yards.
400 on the dot. On the nose. Yep.
So, yeah.
But, Rod, Joseph Osai, when we talk about this performance, 12 tackles, 6 tackles for loss, 3 sacks, had a fumble recovery and a forced fumble. He is the first Power 5 defender since Ndamukong Suh in that game to record at least 12 tackles, 6 tackles for loss, and 3 sacks in a game. And you just say the name Ndamukong Suh, and Matt, I already see the look on your face. Like, it just brings back just nightmares. Craig Way and I were talking about it on Light the Tower.
It's PTSD, man.
Craig just kind of gave a, ooh, like, you just remember. It was quite, and you felt bad for Colt watching that game, which, by the way, guys.
Osai made the opponents look the same way, though. It was he's so dominant on the field. It isn't only that the stats were that great.
Yeah.
Suh looked like a man throwing children around, and Osai
had
plays. His short space explosivity, when he's in the pass, like, he gets to close in those last seconds or two. It's just something that you'd never get to see when somebody stands out so much compared to his peers.
Yeah, I was covering a high school football playoff game that night because I was still covering recruiting. I haven't brought myself to go back and watch that full game
I
have on.
I don't know.
Network.
You guys know how much I value
watching.
Good offensive line
it's
play.
Worth watching,
just,
man.
Just to, I mean, I might have to go back and.
You're
watch
an old lineman, so you should. You'd be amazed. It is. It's amazing.
I've only seen the highlights.
I might watch the Osai game. I might watch Texas Oklahoma State again, and then watch the Ndamukong Suh. I might watch them back to back and see. Just try to compare them because
Longhorn Network
don't think
should do that.
Joseph Osai's game compared to Ndamukong Suh, but statistically, it did.
But, Rod, you talk about Osai, and I had an article at Horns 24/7 right now just trying to put it in context with some of the best defensive performances that I've seen in recent years. And I started with Derek Johnson in the Oklahoma game in 2004.
It was a good one.
It had a 16-tackle game, and he was all over the field that day. And pretty much him by himself, he had an interception, a forced fumble. He kept Texas in that game where Texas was shut out 12-0. Jackson Jeffcoat late in that 2013 season, he had a couple of monster games. Had like a 3-sack game against Texas Tech. There was an Earl Thomas 2-interception game. Mm-hmm. The Deshaun Elliott game.
Earl Thomas 2-interception game came against Oklahoma.
Right, and Brian.
I think the game and the magnitude of the game need to be discussed as well. That's why the Joseph Osai game is so big. People are talking about Tom Herman being fired this year.
Right.
If he loses that game. Mm-hmm. Talking about Ndamukong Suh in a Big 12 title game. Talking about Earl Thomas and Texas OU. So I feel you about the Jeffcoat thing, but it's like, yeah, this against West Virginia. Yeah.
Same game. Yeah, that's why I forgot. Like, Cedric Reed had one of those games that it was a West Virginia game.
DJ was against Oklahoma.
Season.
That's big.
Brian Arakpo in that Oklahoma game, too, Rod. I think that was for him like a 4-tackle-for-loss, 3-sack game.
Yeah.
To your point, Rod, the Alex Okafor Alamo Bowl was one that
it wasn't as big.
And the opponent's Oregon State, but it still was like. That was one where you were like, man, that dude is dominating that tackle. But that was even more unique because it wasn't an all-around game. It was just his pass rush ability against tackle.
Good
had
point.
A total overweighing. And it literally was what tipped that game.
If you go back and watch that game, there was a point in the second half where Manny Diaz found a matchup and is like, just bull rush that guy every play.
Because it eliminated Brandon Cooks, to your point, the way Shipley was eliminated. But like, you can't throw the ball to your receiver if that pass rush is getting there in 2 seconds.
Time.
Speaking of ragdoll, so Alex Okafor ragdoll that poor offensive tackle from Oregon State.
It's crazy, man.
But
he broke him down.
To your point, Rod, a game of this magnitude with everything going on around the program. And look, this is Tom Herman's seat. The flame probably got turned down a notch or two, but it's still very much there.
It's still there.
And we're still talking about, is there going to be change? Because let's face it, there are stakeholders within this program, if you will, that have a say in it that are still – probably satisfied with a win, but they're still not happy with the trajectory of this program. So that the chatter is still there, whether anybody wants it to be there or not.
Yeah, that's true. But if Tomlin wins out, he's going to keep he's staying, guys.
Yeah,
he's,
if he gets
to the Big 12 title game, there is no question. Sorry, boosters and donors, you don't like it. Like,
Zach Brown out here killing myself recruiting.
8-2.
That's what we all predicted pretty much. Like, he's going to stay. Like, I'm sorry. Yeah. You know, it's like Shaka. People remember last year, we were like, if Shaka makes a tournament, then he's in. And all of us was like, I don't want that, but I do want to make the tournament. You don't get to have breakup sex, okay? You don't get to break up with your significant other and then have sex after. That's what Longhorn fans want with Tom Herman, like they wanted with Shaka. They want to go 8-2, make the Big 12 title game, and then fire him and get Tom Herman or Kyle Shanahan. No, you don't get breakup sex. It doesn't happen. It's not
Tom
real.
Tom Herman's not your Kelly
makeup
Kapora.
Sex, not breakup sex. Sorry.
No, you're good, Rod. I like the analogy. But guys, so I tried to find Rod a game in recent years where a Texas defender had the kind of impact Joseph Osai did. From start Ooh. To finish.
What'd you find?
Because
I couldn't find it.
It's got to be
pre-internet. Yeah.
Because I'd have to really go back. Yeah,
it's in hard copies over there on the 48.
I would have to talk to John Bianco or Little. Bill Little, somebody that could tell me, hey, there was a game where Kiki Deayala had 8 sacks in a game.
Yeah. I even combed through the individual game records to see if there anything that could quickly stand out, and there really isn't. And we talked about the Okafor game, and we talked about, I mean, Osai's, and there's a handful of those modern ones. The DJ one, we were talking about eye tests, though, which were sort of marrying the two together.
That's the closest one I can think of.
DJ has a good one. Yeah, that's a good one.
Because that's
a great one.
You can find games where Derek Johnson put up better numbers, but
Peterson, Oklahoma.
Now, gosh, guys, we're like
you're at too. I forgot about that.
Think about this: we're 16 years removed from Derek Johnson's last season at Texas. So if a kid that's 16, 17 years old came to me and said, "Jeff, if I want to watch a Derek Johnson game to summarize his greatness at Texas, what game should I watch?" I said, "Watch that game." Well, it was a loss to Oklahoma. Yes, it was a loss to Oklahoma.
Watch that game.
Go watch that game and watch number 11.
It's 12-0.
And then come back and tell me if you've ever seen a linebacker have a better football game. I don't know, Rod, that there's been a better Texas defensive performance in a loss.
I might have to go back and watch that game too then.
Maybe I'm just doing revisionist history and romanticizing it.
When I post a question on Twitter, several Longhorn fans brought that up. About maybe at least half of them.
That's the one for me that stands out. But this, Rod,
it was unbelievable. It was extraordinary.
We talked about, you know, going into the year, you know, Joseph Osai potentially. And I did a really long piece on Horns 24/7. I looked at the last guys that left Texas as consensus All-American or had All-American defensive end seasons. I started with Corey Redding in 2002. Mm-hmm. There's Arakpo, Jeff Coat, Sergio Kendall. So I think that's 4. There might have been one more, but basically saying, you know, here's what Joseph Osai needs to do. Like, what are the boxes he needs to check to have one of these All-American seasons, leave as a high draft pick, etc., national award winner? And one of those was those guys in each of those seasons they had a monster game in a game of consequence. Mm. Like I mentioned, Jeff Coat, he had the big national game against Tech. He had one against Baylor. That Oklahoma game where Texas pulls the upset, I think Jeff Coat has 3.5 tackles for loss, 2 sacks.
Big stage.
I mentioned Arakpo in the OU game. Sergio Kendall, that was more kind of going on reputation, but Sergio Kendall's best game of the year statistically was the Alabama game. He had like 4.5 tackles for loss and 2.5 sacks against the Nick Saban offensive line.
Man.
So you had to have, if you're Joseph Osai, you had to have one of those games. You have to be in a conference title hunt. And because of him, Texas is in a conference title hunt because he had one of those games in a game of consequence.
And there's one other game I forgot to mention is a game you were on the field for, but Casey Hampton 2000 against Oklahoma State? Yes. He ended up with 3 tackles for loss, 2 sacks, 2 forced fumbles, and 4 QB hurries.
Was that
hurries.
After Oklahoma that year?
Right before, the week before.
Okay, because according to Mac, according to Derek K. Royal, actually, he had an epic Oklahoma game, too, but we just got our butts whipped.
Yeah, he had 2 QB hurries in that one. He had a tackle for loss. He was very good, too. Man, to have 4 QB hurries at D-tackle, 2 sacks, 3 tackles for loss, and 2 forced fumbles.
Wow.
So, and that's how he rounded out that first month. That's so after crazy. The first 4 games, he had 4 forced fumbles.
Wow.
So Casey Hampton could have won, and that was against Okie State back in 2000.
I'd like to say, guys, we're kind of the Casey Hampton show of record. We just as much as we can. And Rod, I know you talked about him just as kind of the leader, the kind of guy he was when you played with him. Like, we don't. People need to understand. Like, yes, Casey Hampton put up like ridiculous numbers. He did it as a nose tackle where he's getting double teamed and triple teamed every play.
Constantly. Yeah.
And he led you in total tackles 2 years
twice.
In a row.
Twice. I don't think I've ever heard of a D tackle leading a team in tackles ever.
No.
He did it twice.
A zero tech, Rod. A zero tech.
Yeah, man. That dude. Yeah. He's crazy. That's unbelievable. Yeah. He doesn't get enough respect.
But so to
close, he gets plenty of it. He doesn't get enough.
So to close out the conversation on the defense, and I don't think we can say enough about Joseph Osai, but Rod. Under Chris Ash, this defense has been really good about taking the ball away. And you can see that throughout the course of a game if a safety – I've seen Caden Stearns do it a couple times, making an open field tackle, and you're swiping at a ball. So that tells you that at least – look, turnovers are one of those things that, you know, I've heard Will Muschamp say at any defensive coordinator worth their salt. Look, sometimes they just – they come in bunches and you can't explain it. Sometimes you're in the right position, they just don't happen.
Mm-hmm.
But if you're coaching them to happen and making it an emphasis, those waves will happen. And Texas just had one of those waves come their way. It was kind of the perfect storm. You had a quarterback who, like you said, Rod, he's going to make a few spectacular plays. He's going to make a few plays that give you some. It's just on those plays where he's going to give you some, can you capitalize on it? And Texas did.
They didn't versus Baylor, right? Remember, they dropped 3 interceptions versus Baylor. So the concern was, all right, when Spencer Sanders does throw you one, you make sure you got to catch it. And when the ball bounces, you got to make sure it bounces your way. But I will say this about Chris Ash. This defense has been really good at taking the ball away all year long. They came into that game tied for the lead in takeaways in the Big 12. They are now the sole leader in takeaways in the Big 12. So that's something. That's just something that they've been doing. And by the way, that's without your corners, you know, making a lot of plays on the ball. So when the corners start getting better and making more plays on the ball, which they did in this game, even though they got beat a lot, they made more plays on the ball than they have in the previous 4 Big 12 games before that, I think this defense will be even more opportunistic. And we all know that's the ultimate cheat code. I don't give a damn how bad your rush defense is and how much you get beat if your pass defense is really terrible.
Yards?
Yeah, but if you can force turnovers, ultimate cheat code, ultimate extra credit. You'll always pass the class, even if you fail the initial test, if you get that kind of extra credit. That's what the turnovers represent.
Well, and if you get pressure on the quarterback, that's about as well as you can predict any measure, you know. So, like, if you really can't predict the turnovers or which way the ball's going to bounce. But if you get into that quarterback and you may dislodge a few, you may disrupt the rhythm, or you may cause a bad decision, and that's the quickest way, and that's something that you've had individual pass rushers at Texas over recent years, but it never seemed like the team effort was there to complement the one piece. Like, Aminahu was great, but you weren't getting to the quarterback very often, or he wasn't on the field very often. It's like, Osai's always out there, and the other guys on the D-line can hold their end of the bargain, too.
Rod, the one game I want to bring up, just for contextual purposes in terms of games defensive lines have dominated, one that I was thinking about, and I figured if there was a game like that, and I hadn't looked at it until just now, if there was a game like that where somebody had one of those insane stat lines, it would have been the 99 game against Nebraska here in Austin, a game you played in.
Oh, yeah.
The defensive line, Sean Rogers, Casey Hampton, Cedric Woodard, and Aaron Humphrey.
Unbelievable.
They combined for 10 tackles for loss in that game.
Yeah, dude. That was, honestly, I don't think I played. No, I wouldn't play with a better D-line than that. No way. It's just impossible. I mean, that D-line was unbelievable. I mean, 3 of those guys, all 4 of them played in the league, but 3 of them had careers in the league.
Yeah.
they were pros, meaning they played more than 2 or 3 years and got a cup of coffee, more than the average.
And Aaron Humphrey was in the league, was out of the league, and was one of the few guys that ended up going to the XFL and then got another shot being in the league.
Yeah, it was with the Jags, I think the Bucks, maybe something like that. Yeah,
I think after the XFL, I think the Jets brought him in for a cup of coffee.
And there's nobody in the world that fits the XFL more than Aaron Humphrey.
Oh, I love A-Hump too. Man, A-Hump's a good guy.
Oh, that was a salty-ass defensive line, man.
It was. It was a nasty D-line. Yeah, the back end just wasn't up to par yet, but later on, Matt got the back end going, but man, talk about a young DB like myself. I was a starter my sophomore year. My D-line had Casey Hampton and Sean Rogers on it with Corey Redding.
Rod, you didn't even show up in the box score in this game, Rod.
It's all right.
That's his job.
Oh, yeah, because for some reason, Carl Boris had the bright idea to put a nickel package out there against old school Nebraska running basically the triple option. pulling guards and fullbacks, and he's like, "Babers, you gotta take them on outside shoulder.
Put your shoulder into it.
Run through them." And I'm like, "What the hell, man? Put a linebacker out there. He's not. They're not throwing. I wouldn't even guard anybody. I was literally playing linebacker." Yeah. He's like, "I want Babers out there.
I want a fast 200 pound linebacker."
Rod's getting the recruiting pitch from Tim Bruce or Everett Withers, like, "Come here, be the next Jerry Gray." And then he's got Bull Reese talking about feather the option, take on that leverage,
take on
that block, son.
And I think I did it twice. We played him in the Big 12 title game too. Oh, dude, it was brutal. But I see that guard pulling around, or that they would pull a center sometimes. Oh, it was brutal.
Rod, what'd you weigh as a true freshman?
Oh, God.
Well, you said you beefed up to
170, 172, 170, 175.
Yeah, because I watched
that. I think I had to beef up to like one. I think by the end of the season, I was probably close to 190.
Anytime
I was eating. Because I wasn't covering nobody. Yeah. I was just hitting linebackers.
You need to have some pounds on them bones.
Anytime that 99 Oklahoma game comes on, I managed to watch a little bit of it because LHN seems to play it a lot.
The Mike Leach.
Yeah,
dummy
Rod,
script.
Rod, that Reebok jersey on you looks like it's about two sizes too big.
God. Oh, that was such an ugly. The Reebok cleats are ugly.
Yeah.
My toenails came off because of them damn cleats.
Did they? They were
bad. They were bad. My toenails came off a few times because of Reebok cleats. That was a big complaint.
Athletes' feet, something, and not the like other athletes' feet,
not the
but
fungus.
Like when you talk about like basketball players, it's like, man, their feet get beat up really
bad.
Dude,
you get beat up, man.
Hey, man, as a lifelong Texas fan, it was a big deal that next year when you could buy Texas gear and it had the swoosh on it.
It was. Mm-hmm.
It was a big deal.
That was
man.
All Mac, man. Mac had that plan from the jump.
It's a big deal.
Yeah.
Rod, what is a big deal is this Texas offense. And look, we talk about the good part of the line of scrimmage for Texas right now. Guys, I said it after the alarm was going off for me after the UTEP game.
Yeah.
Where they couldn't really get a push. It hasn't gotten any better. It's gotten worse. And let's just face it, man. This offensive line is just bad. They're not going to. If they can get to serviceable, that'll be an improvement, Rod, because Texas can't run the ball with any consistency.
Nope.
Sam Ellinger is getting a hell beat out of him. Any way you slice him, man, this offensive line is just not good.
How many sacks
did they
give up in that game?
They gave up five in that game. Sam Ellinger's been sacked 12 times in the last three games.
And you can tell Sam's playing through pain, too, because he's trying to not embrace, like, because when Sam's healthy, he ain't even afraid. He's embracing contact and running through. And you could tell early in this game, I mean, he was trying to be a pocket passer, protect himself, and he didn't have any designed runs until, like, he had to run. And it looked like a designed draw maybe in the
fourth
quarter.
They had a spy on him for most of the game. But I agree with what you're saying, too, by the way. They had a spy on him for most of the game, too. But you're right. He doesn't look healthy. Well, he's admitted
it's because
he's
been getting the crappy. Yeah.
We finally heard from a source of Horns 24/7 that Sam was limited in practice after the Baylor game because the helmet to the calf. Like it's impairing his ability to step into throws. Well, that's obvious. Ellinger's playing through injuries.
He's just a warrior, man.
Guys, I don't.
And it also explains some of the throws being a little more errant if you can't step into throws.
Yeah.
Rod, we can talk to me, and I know you've got some thoughts. We can talk about concepts that work for this offense. We can talk about things, you know, for some reason they find things that work and then don't force them enough. Or,
it's crazy,
We can talk about rotations until we're blue in the face, but that's not going to change.
Mm-mm.
Guys, until they figure out a way to work around this offensive line, everything else for me on offense is pretty much moot. It's just can they, based on how – this is where Texas is right now, based on how the defense and the special teams are playing – can the offense look at that and say, okay, what do we need to do at this point to win the football game? At least give the offense this. At least they're not turning it over.
Yeah.
And under Tom Herman, that really – offensive turnovers really haven't been a big issue. But, man, I don't know at this point what you can do if you're Mike Yurcich given just – and it's crazy to me just how bad this offensive line is. Like in 2017 – okay, you lose Connor Williams, and we knew that offensive line had injuries throughout the year. Yeah, we knew they were going to be bad. Rod, I thought this offensive line was going to be a strength, and not only are they not a strength, they're hurting you really bad right now.
Yeah, before the season started, and I had the rant, and I'll go back and find the quote just to make sure, but I have my notes right here, literally from the preseason, from the offseason, and I said that Texas needs to make sure that they implement the Joe Burrow quick passing game from LSU to insulate Sam with his offensive line. And what Joe Brady's belief, and I'll paraphrase if I can't find the quote here, but I'm sure I'll look for it here in a second and maybe be able to find it. But I'll paraphrase. He basically, Joe Brady's belief was, we got to get away from seven-man, six-man protections at LSU, and that's what he did. He said, and emphasize more basically six-man routes, if you will. Mm-hmm. All right, well, with five-man routes, as many guys on routes as possible, right? He wanted to go five wide or empties, as empty formation as much as he could to try to get guys out on routes. So he wanted more five-man routes and less six- and seven-man protections. And I thought Texas should try to implement some of that philosophy, too, because I think Sam's really good at the quick game. He's always been really good at the quick game. That's partly why when they go into two-minute mode and they late in the game when Sam's got to come save the day and they go hurry up, up-tempo, that Sam's pretty good. Go look at when they go empty formation. And even in this game, when they went empty formation, they were slicing up Oklahoma State out of empty formation because Sam can do that. It's getting the ball out of his hands really quickly, but also that'll insulate him a little bit. And they didn't. I don't know why they haven't tried to do that. I think that's part of the reason that Sam has lost trust in the offensive line, and he's losing trust in the wide receivers too. And I think that all of that is kind of working in this kind of downward spiral where the offense is going right now from where it started.
Well, and going empty like that, not only does it help you with those numbers when you get the five routes out there because of the amount of defenders needed to defend them, but it actually helped.
Yeah. It defines everything quicker for them. If they want to blitz, great, blitz me. Yes. I got five wide. Somebody's wide open.
Wide open, literally.
Literally
and,
wide open.
And it's going to be immediately open. Yeah. So it's going to simplify the decision-making process in that regard. And but the part where it's almost most misunderstood is when we're talking about the running game. And, I mean, if you watch the Arizona Cardinals, it's why that they're able to run all over the NFL and pass now.
The second in the NFL in rushing. Well, at least they were.
Yeah, and all the metrics, I mean, on per-carry things, they've been up there even last season. And it's not because, oh, well, they're great at running the ball. It's like, no, they're going to go and spread you out as much as possible.
Numbers.
You can get your passing back.
Numbers
exactly. And then your quarterback, that's if you have a quarterback that's mobile, it's going to make it even easier on him because he's the man that's unaccounted for, and you're taking an extra man out of the box. And if they want to then overload one aspect of it, you're going to have, like you were saying, the wide open guy, and that's where these modern offenses at this line of scrimmage, people like Sam, I mean, when Sam's at quarterback, he's as experienced of a collegiate quarterback and at the line of scrimmage. Scrimmage and what he's seeing and switching into the right decision, and that's just why you'd like to see more of it.
Rod, there was a sack Texas gave up in the second half where they showed the Fox TV copy. It cuts to kind of the wide receiver development on the route.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm watching Joshua Moore trying to put a double move on somebody and just slow developing switch routes. And I'm like – in a third, you're getting yourself into third and long. Why do you just continually insist on making this a drop back passing game against an offensive line that can't hold up, against receivers that can't get off press coverage? And I asked Tom Herman about the man coverage issue because he kind of hit on it, and I wanted to get his thoughts on it after the game. He said, we weren't great. He's like, we did enough. But the enough they did, Rod, it was moving guys around and scheming some things up. I don't know that anybody really just beat man coverage on their own, just blew by a guy.
I got the numbers, actually, if you want to look at that. Yeah, I mean, they didn't really do a great job of beating man coverage. They did an okay job of it. And basically, it was schemed open. So there were two receptions. If you get bump and run coverage, there were two receptions on nine targets for the receivers when they were going up against bump and run coverage. Both of those were by Brandon Eagles. One was a touchdown, and then one was like a first, like a smoke route on a first down. Yeah. He got a first down on that one. And here's what happens on the Brennan Eagles touchdown, and it's brilliant, and give the credit to the Texas offensive staff.
Since the
TCU game, they have had this kind of concept that helps the wide receivers get off of press coverage. They'll have two receivers to one side of the field, and they'll have one off the line, the one on the outside, the number one receiver. You count from the outside in. From the sideline in. They'll have him off the line of scrimmage, and they'll motion him to almost a stack, whether he's inside or outside of that number two receiver, and they end up stacked to a certain extent. What that does is oftentimes it'll either force the defense to switch responsibilities, switch their alignments, and switch their assignments, or it forces them to play level, so they'll play off of you. They won't play bump and run. They'll play levels. Either one will play bump, and the other will play off. Either way, it forces those defenders to at the last minute, switch their technique. What Oklahoma State did, and I don't know why they did it, because the defender who was Holmes, I believe was his name, who was defending Jake Smith on the outside before he went in motion, they had their corners switch, basically. Mm-hmm. Basically, they decided to go, oh, you know what? We're going to bump this coverage over. So they bumped it. The outside guy ended up guarding Brendan Eagles instead of Jake Smith and bumped the coverage over to Jake Smith to the other corner, which didn't really make a lot of sense. He could have just went over the top of him and been played off and actually played Jake Smith the whole time. So I didn't really understand it. But once that corner bumps, Sam does a great job of timing out the snap perfectly for where the corner, as soon as he bumps over, he doesn't have time to get set.
Yep.
All right? And it's a corner. It's always about getting set so you know your leverage and your technique, your alignment, your assignment, before all of that can add up for the corner. Sam snaps it. Brendan Eagles used the leverage, gets open, free release, touchdown.
And that's where the timeliness and being able to identify.
The timing is big.
And yes, exactly. To be able to do that and having those guys understand what's accomplished there is so big for just the idea that the opponent is still in the area where they're trying to decipher. There's a momentary minute of confusion, and that's where tempo can be different. Like, they're talking about the tempo within the play. This isn't tempo with running up to the line, getting it as fast as you can. There are many different ways that tempo can be implemented, and this is a tempo-based play that's based on the motion and then going.
And exactly, and then the defensive backs.
The second you lull them to sleep, and it's the same way, boom, like you'll see other types of tempo on play calling. Tempo, like at the pro level, like McVay does it as much as possible, where you're trying to be deceptive by changing up different tempos of your offense within plays.
What you just laid out, Rod, that is a Mike Yurcich staple. I heard him, I forget what offseason chalk talk he was doing that I was locked into, but he basically said, he said his offensive coordinators, he said the two weapons we have in our arsenal that we need to maximize are motion and cadence.
Mm-hmm.
And you did both of them on that
play. Yeah, that's a great point. And so I just that's a great concept, though, to help your receivers get open. They've been using that for the last 3 or 4 weeks.
Right.
They use it again. And what we're saying about the five-man route concept as opposed to the six-man protections is, and this is the quote from Joe Brady from last year.
Mm-hmm.
He said, statistically, it shows that when you're in a five-man protections give up less sacks. A lot of people think that when you get a lot of pressure, you need to bring the box in and bring the max protection, seven-man protections. But I think you actually go five-man protections against more pressure. You actually get the ball out faster. You limit what the defense can actually do, which is true. So I think I'm with you. I don't know why they don't just go more. I go more five. Teams start wanting to pressure me. I go more empty formation on them.
And while we're in
the ball
this
out conversation,
I've already seen this offense give up a sack against the seven man protection.
Yeah,
so
right.
Just give me something
against
else.
A three man rush.
Yeah, give me something else.
And this is where contextual data matters so much, because like you're looking in the modern analytics world and can quickly look at something and be like, oh well, it works. And then this one, it's less pressure. Well, it's like it's only less pressure if you get the ball out in time. So you got to.
Exactly.
And Joe Burrow gets the ball out.
Well, and Sam, a senior quarterback, will probably
ball and being coached up. But that's also where, like, if you don't exactly know what you're looking at and looking at the data and be like, oh, well, they said that this five-man line, you're going to go and have less pressure. It's like, no, you have to get – it only gets less pressure because of this alternative thing that's affecting it, which is the mental aspect of making that decision so quick and timely and understanding the situation you're being put in. Because over time, if you're going to be sitting back there for 4 seconds, it's probably going to be way, way worse. But understanding your personnel, being self-aware and self-scouting, then the players go out there and actually implement.
At some point, somebody in that offensive meeting room, whether it's Tom Herman when he's in there, Mike Yurcich, Herb Hand, it doesn't matter. Somebody's got to stand up and say, guys, we don't have Alabama or Georgia's offensive line. We have got to do something to help this offensive line.
And we got to do something to help protect Sam.
Yes. We're going to get our quarterback murdered before the end of the year.
He's not going to make it to the end if we keep this up.
More of those five-man lines. Yeah.
Because
get the ball out quick. It's going to be less hits on Sam.
That should be the conversation, Rob, because if your quarterback gets hurt and you don't have him down the stretch, none of y'all are going to have jobs.
None of this matters.
Exactly.
But I will say one thing I really like, because I know we're getting close to ending this thing. We got to talk about how Yurcich helped free up Josh Moore for the touchdown in overtime. So, and I love that. I put out this stat via Twitter, so go check out my Twitter at Rod Babers if you want the stat. But Josh Moore, the entire game, right? Your leading receiver, he has 5 targets in regulation and all of them are on the outside. Three of them against bump and run, zero catches, right? He can get nothing on the outside versus the corners.
And I don't think any targets from the slot yet?
No. But in overtime, like I said, somebody finally figures it out. I don't know what the hell it took him so long. Maybe you should just listen to Longhorn Blitz and you'll get some semblance of a clue. But in overtime, he gets three targets in overtime. All were in the slot or with him in motion. And the results were an incompletion. Remember, they bring him on in motion, and then they throw a deep ball to him in overtime. Mm-hmm. And it was actually, he wasn't open. But it shows you that at
least
they were trying to feature one of their top guys. Remember Tom Herman, after they beat Texas Tech in 2018, Louis Jordan Humphrey catches the game-winning touchdown. He said after, Greg Davis always taught me, in big-time moments, think players, not plays.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's what he was thinking. I think they were thinking players, not plays. They were like, Josh Warren got the ball. Let's force feed it to him. Let's find a way to get it to him. So they also end up going, the other target was a defensive pass interference call. Remember that one?
Yep.
And then a 15-yard touchdown reception, of course. So there were, I think, total in the in overtime, there were six plays, right? One, two, three, four, five. No, five plays, actually. Because that was the first and goal. And it was a first and goal, then a second and eight. And then it was a third and eight, and then a first and goal and a second and goal. Okay, so I think there were five plays, and three of those plays were targets at Josh Moore.
Yeah, all out of the slot, which is something that they were all out of the slot.
And they went empty formation. They put him in at the third receiving slot, count from the outside in. He was third. They would go empty. They would motion Rojo out, and they'd put him in the slot. He's already matched up against probably their third, fourth best cover guy. In the slot, that's the way it works out usually. And that's a concept, by the way, that they used against Oklahoma. Remember, against Oklahoma, they used that empty formation a ton. And Josh Moore had four receptions for 40 yards. I think like two or three first downs from that formation. Because they kept putting him in the slot because everybody kept bumping. Oklahoma was bumping and running like 40% of the time. The wide receivers couldn't get off the jam. So give Yurcich and Herman some credit for at least evolving late in that game. In that game to give Josh Moore a chance to be successful, and that ended up being the game-winning touchdown.
Just like to see him do it earlier and more often.
I agree with that. Yeah. I think they tried, but they not to that extent. They didn't force it. Like we said,
guys, the bottom line on offense, you got to figure out a way to help this offensive line. Otherwise, Sam Ehlinger is not going to make it through the year.
Well, and that's a way you help it. Just put your best receiver closer to him in the slot.
You see how comfortable Sam is when Jake Smith's out there? Yeah. Tom Armstrong was the best play he'd ever seen, right? Fourth and seven?
Yeah, mm-hmm.
Fourth and seven. Best play I've ever seen. Sam scrambling out of the pocket, something we've talked about, the scramble drill. They suck at the scramble drill. Wide receivers suck at the scramble drill. You put one of your better wide receivers in there, he ends up running. Scramble drill. Sam Ehlinger is one of the worst quarterbacks in college football right now in terms of his passing grade outside the pocket. He's a 39, third worst in all of FBS. He's terrible, but you give him good talent, look what he did. Scrambled. Boom, found the guy in the back of the end zone.
How about that? Your two best receivers in scramble drill this year have been Jake Smith and Jordan Whittington?
Yes, so. Yeah, I guess so.
So there's that. So we'll close with this, Rod. I went kind of down a mini rabbit hole looking at the West Virginia game because we know, like we talked about on the show, I've written another site, this program has a problem handling success. They win a big game.
Yes, they do, man.
They just kind of flounder the next week.
Unfortunately.
Tom Herman of Texas.
Oh, no.
When he's beaten a ranked opponent.
Oh, no.
The following week, he's 2-4 against the spread with two outright losses.
Damn you, Jeff Howe. Damn you.
Hopefully you bounce back.
Damn you, Jeff Howe.
And with this line for the West Virginia game, opening at a +7.
Oh, no.
Tom Herman in Big 12 play, when favored by 6-plus points, 4-9-2 against the spread with two outright losses.
How about that line bumps on down? The rest of America bet it down, and we'll get into a better area.
That's true. Good point.
Technicalities.
All right.
So you like that? You like that stat, Rod?
No, that's not the way I wanted to end the podcast.
This.
No.
Jake Smith, it was like first time he had more than 90% of the snaps in the slot.
If Tom Herman's going to turn this thing around, if he's going to save this thing, this is his opportunity to do it.
Yeah.
You want to start changing the narrative?
There's
a great spot to change it right now.
I totally agree with that. Yep, and I'm hoping they do.
Let's go!
It's the most all-star studded challenge ever. And this time, it's every competitor for themselves.
Best challenge ever!
The Challenge All-Stars. New season now streaming on Paramount+. Go to ParamountPlus.com to try it free. Terms apply.
All right. That's going to do it for this week's show. Matt, thanks for everything, man.
Oh, you're more than welcome.
Rod B., appreciate the time and the knowledge.
Anytime, brother, anytime.
For Matt, for Rod, for everybody at the Austin Radio Network and the Horn, 104.9, 101.9 AM 1260, streaming on the Horn app and at hornfm.com, where you can catch Rod B. on the Triple Option with RBKD each and every weekday from 3 to 7.
Shameless plug.
You can also catch myself and Craig Way each and every weekday on Light the Tower from 10 to noon. And thanks to Matt, you can get all of our archives, our classic interviews and shows. Everything's available on the Longhorn Blitz SoundCloud page.
Yep, just type in Longhorn Blitz.
Find this podcast anywhere you get your podcast, Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, Spotify. If I just search Horns 24/7 podcast to get us, State of Recruiting, and the flagship. Again, search Horns 24/7 podcast. Don't forget to like us and leave us a 5-star review. For the Horn family, for the Horns 24/7 family, I'm Jeff Howe. Thank you so much for downloading and listening, and we will catch you again on the next episode.
You've been listening to Longhorn Blitz with Horns247.com. Remember, for the latest Longhorn news 24/7, visit Horns247.com.
New CBS Monday. NCIS is back.
We need all hands on deck.
So grab your gear.
NCIS!
And join our elite team.
What are the charges?
Murder.
New cases to be solved.
Double tap to the chest.
Same caliber as the murder weapon.
And new criminals to catch.
That's the bomb maker. Where's the bomb?
A new NCIS, Monday, 9, 8 central, on CBS and streaming on Paramount+.